ओम गिनचमिनंदस्य जनांजनासलकाय चक्षुसुमिलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदामायं ददति सपन्नतिकम् पञ्चकौपजीभ्यश्च कृपसिन्धुभैव च प्रतीचनां पवनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमः. Coward boys, in their love for Krishna, as they were herding the cows, they thought that Krishna may be hungry. And therefore, they told Krishna, or suggested, that Krishna supply them with food, because their motive was to please Krishna. And this is one of the characteristics of Brajadam, the spiritual world, is that regardless of what things appear to be on the surface, everything is ultimately meant to please Krishna. Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami Maharaj explains this in Chaitanya Charitamrita, that there may be dressing oneself very beautifully, there may be combing one's hair, there may be this, there may be that. And superficially, this appears to be exactly like the activities, the selfish activities, the atma indriya priti, vancha, tari balikam. It appears to be like the selfish activities full of desires, self-centered desires in this world. But in the spiritual world, everything, regardless of what it appears to be on the surface, is meant for Krishna's pleasure. It is motivated by love, not lust, by love, by desiring to please Krishna. So one cannot penetrate deeply into the pastimes or the understanding of what goes on in Goloka Vrindavan, in the spiritual world, unless one understands this principle, that everything is meant, everyone acts, everything is conscious there, the land, the trees, the earth, the grass, the rivers, everything is conscious, and everything in the spiritual world desires only Krishna's pleasure. And Krishna, on the other hand, the transcendental supreme personality of Godhead, the supreme enjoyer, his desire is to increase the ecstasy of the devotees. So there is a competition, not for who can be the topmost and enjoy the most, as is in the material world, and therefore there's always so much fighting in the material world because we naturally conflict with each other's plans for enjoyment. So there's always a desire to gain power for the purpose of controlling, for the purpose of enjoying. So Ishwara Aham, Aham Bhogi. So power, especially financial power, is required to control. And that's what's required to enjoy. If you can't control, you can't enjoy. So it's completely different. The competition in the material world is quite unwholesome and it's quite destructive. It results in people killing each other, exploiting each other. But in the spiritual world, the competition is there's two different kinds. One kind is, oh, you've done so nicely in trying to please Krishna. Let me also do well in pleasing Krishna. So there's no enmity. There's no wanting to pull the other down. there's appreciation. And the other kind is, you're serving so nicely, let me serve you. And the other person says, oh, no, let me serve you better than you're serving me. Oh, no, let me serve you even better. And in this way, there is a transcendental competition of serving without enmity or jealousy in the heart. All is meant to please Krishna. So the cowherd boys, and Krishna's saying so because they wanted to feed Krishna. They were fearing that Krishna was hungry. They went to the brahmanas, the priests who were performing the Angirasa sacrifice in a village by the Yamuna River. And they begged some food for Krishna from them, and the Brahmins refused to give it. They refused to even reply. They didn't say yes, they didn't say no, they didn't say anything. They practically didn't acknowledge the existence of these pure servants of Krishna. And the cowherd boys seemed to be somewhat disappointed. And they went back, and Krishna said, he explained the reason for this, is that they lack devotion. They are very learned, they're intelligent, they're austere, but they lack devotion. They lack love for Krishna, which is the purpose of all the sacrifices, of all the austerities, of all the charity, of everything. The purpose is to develop love for Krishna. Prema Pramato Mahan. This is the goal. Vedes Chasavar Aham Eva Vidyo. The test of religion, the test of one's practices. Sadan Kore Bhajan Kore Mrityu Janmay Hoy. It will be tested even at the time of death. And what is that test? How much? One has actually developed love for Krishna. So Krishna sent the cowherd boys to the wives of the Brahmins, who were very deeply developed in their love for Krishna. And they immediately began to gather different foodstuffs for Krishna. But when they heard that the name of Krishna, even they went into ecstasy, and very sweetly it's described how they didn't reply either to the request, just like their husbands, the Brahmins, didn't reply, but the wives of the Brahmins, they didn't also reply, but out of ecstasy, ecstatic love for Krishna, they were stunned. And therefore the cowherd boys said, they said more to awaken the Brahmanis from their ecstatic trance in remembrance of Krishna. Not hardness of heart, but softness and love. Mazrin, the softness of heart described as the characteristic of bhava bhakti and nectar devotion bhakti was some descended. So then they gathered their food and they went to where Krishna was in the forest, and they saw Krishna and they saw Balaram. And this is what they saw. Shamam haranya paradim vanamaya varha datu pravala natavesham anuvatam se vinyastahastam mitarena dunamam abjam karnot palalaka kapolam kabjabhasam. His complexion, they saw Krishna. After having heard about Krishna, they finally saw him, the Supreme Lord, who was unlimitedly beautiful, unlimitedly powerful, but unlimitedly beautiful. Again, try and conceive of how beautiful, unlimitedly beautiful is. That is Krishna. They saw his complexion was dark blue, and his garments, paritana, they were golden. And wearing a peacock feather, colored minerals, his skin was painted with colored minerals, just like we paint the deities. What do we call them? The tilaks. Sometimes we call them gopidats. And they're also gopadats. The cowherd boys would decorate each other's faces, and everyone would want to decorate Krishna's face in a wonderful way with the different colored minerals of Braja. And Krishna had sprigs of flower buds and a garland of forest flowers, a long, long garland of forest flowers, the Vajayanti garland that came down to his knees, very long and very, very beautiful with different kinds of flowers. He was dressed just like a dramatic dancer. Do you remember that we heard the description of Krishna's beauty from the 21st chapter, that Bahar Pidam Natavaravapu Kanaya Kanikaram, when Krishna was entering the forest with a peacock feather, and he had one blue Kanikara flower over one of his ears, and he would move it from one ear to the other. So this description is similar, but there are differences. So Krishna was dressed just like a dramatic dancer. He rested one hand on the shoulder of a friend. Like who? Like what deities? Krishna Balaram, yes. And he's archetypal, cool teenager. He's just resting one elbow on the shoulder of his friend, and the other hand, he was twirling a lotus flower. No teenagers, they don't do it so much in Perth, but in New York. Oh, just hanging out on the street corners, always leaning on something, trying to look really cool like that. But not one of them ever twirls a lotus flower. And lilies, flowers, graced his ears. His hair hung down over his cheeks. One of the acharyas translated that as his hair also hung down over his forehead. And his lotus-like face was smiling. Very, very beautiful. So this verse describes what these wives of the Brahmins saw. They already had heard about Krishna, and they already were in love with him just by hearing about him. And now they saw him in this beautiful way, and they were completely overwhelmed, stunned also. They had become stunned. Their love was so developed, they had become stunned just by hearing the name of Krishna. And now they were seeing him all attractively, unlimitedly beautiful. One time, not last year, but the year before, or maybe it was last year when I was in Vrindavan, there was, in the month of July, there was a lot of rain. And early one morning, there was a dark cloud. Of course, when there's rain, there's always dark clouds. But there was a dark bluish cloud, not blue like the color of the Madanga, but Shama, the color of evening. Dark blue cloud, filled with rain. And this was the only time that I've actually ever seen this. And it was early in the morning. You were there, Bunky. Maybe you saw it. No, you were here. But the sun had just risen. And that the cloud was illuminated, this dark blue cloud was illuminated by the sparkling sunlight. And the whole, and it looked so, it was out of this world, and it looked so incredible. The dark blue effulgent cloud. And I thought, yes, this must give us a glimpse, even though it is Chandra Shaka Nyaya from a great distance. But it gives us a hint of what Krishna's complexion must be like, effulgent and darkish like that. It was incredible. And then mixed with his yellow dhoti, his garlands, and then a garland of forest flowers and decorations of all different colored minerals, forest minerals, and a peacock feather on his head. And there, resting his elbow on his friend and twirling a lotus. And so beautiful, lotus eyes. One of the acharyas say that his, I think it may even be in a comment here, that his eyes reach to the end of his forehead, the corners of his eyes, big lotus-like eyes, like a lotus leaf. So incredibly, all attractively beautiful. We can't imagine, we can hear a description, but we can't actually imagine how beautiful Krishna is, because our minds can only conceive of limited beauty, but just try to conceive of unlimited beauty. And that is Krishna. So there are three verses that describe, that the acharyas mentioned, that beautifully describe Krishna. This is the second best. The first one is the one we heard from the 21st chapter of the Gopis describing the flute. And the first one, that's the first one. And this is the second one. And the one in which the first verse of the 14th chapter of the 10th canto, where Lord Brahma describes the beauty of Krishna. It's also very, very beautiful. First verse, he says, "My dear Lord, you are the only worshipable Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore I offer my humble obeisances and prayers just to please you. O son of the king of the cowherds, your transcendental body is dark blue like a new cloud. Your garment is brilliant like lightning, and the beauty of your face is enhanced by your gunja, your berry earrings, red blackish, and the peacock feather on your head, wearing garlands of various forest flowers and leaves, and equipped with a herding stick, a buffalo horn, and a flute, all tucked in different parts of Krishna's body. You stand beautifully with a morsel of food in your hand." That's what Brahma saw. So this one, this verse is filled with veneration. He's like this. He's understood Krishna is unlimitedly powerful, even though he sees him now as a boy. So even though he sees this overwhelming beauty of Krishna, he's not overwhelmed. And therefore he's overwhelmed by Krishna's potency, his power, his aishwarya, his opulence, and therefore he offers his obeisances. But in the verse we're just reading, these brahmanis, the wives of the brahmins, they describe the body of Krishna and the beautiful face of Krishna and its decorations. Lilies graced his ear, his hair hanging down over his cheeks, because vadanam, vadanam, a madhuram, madhuram, vadanam, madhuram. Very beautiful and sweet is Krishna's face. And he was smiling, which is Mridugandhi. Excuse me. Madhugandhi, like the fragrance. He's very soft smiling and very gentle. But here, even though there is less reverence, or there is no reverence, it is just so much love, they're attracted to the beauty of Krishna. They don't describe the flute of Krishna, which is so attractive. So in the 21st chapter, the verse that is number one, which is spoken by the number one devotees of Krishna, the Braja Gopis, everything is described, including Krishna's flute. So that verse is considered the topmost verse, even though these are so wonderful in the description also. The first, Bahar Vidam Natavaravapu Kanayo Kanikaram, wearing a peacock feather ornament upon his head, blue Kanikara flowers on his ears, a yellow garment which is as brilliant as gold, and the Bhajayanti garland. Lord Krishna exhibited his transcendental form as the greatest of dancers, also Natavara, number one dancer, as he entered the forest of Vrindavan, beautifying it with the marks of his footprints. He filled the holes of his flute with the nectar of his lips, Adha Amrit. So therefore, because they're thinking, as they will say later, Gopyakim Machared Ayam Kusalam Savenu, how fortunate is this flute, because it's being touched by the lotus-like lips of Krishna. So this verse describes that, the nectarian lotus-like lips of Krishna, and the coward boy singing his glory, is considered even more deeply ecstatic a meditation than even this verse, which is so wonderful and so intimate, and such a loving description of Krishna's beauty. But that verse is considered the number one verse that describes the beauty of Krishna. So that's what they saw. So we'll see if we can read the comments of Srila Swami and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur on this verse. Srila Sridhar Swami says, his garment was like gold. Or in other words, they saw him whose garment was effulgently yellow, whose dressing was like that of a dancer with forest garlands, peacock feathers, colored minerals and twigs, who had placed his hand upon the shoulder of a friend, with the other hand twirling a pastime lotus, upon whose ears were lilies, whose hair hung over his forehead. So Swami translates it in that way. And upon whose mouth there was a smile. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura. Let's hear what he extracts from this verse. The Brahmin's wife saw Krishna dressed in a yellow cloth, Haranya Paridhim. Haranya means like gold. He was decorated with a garland of forest flowers and leaves extending to his feet, a peacock feather in his topknot, tilak and designs of colored clay, fresh leaves tucked in his belt, water lilies over his ears, curls of hair falling over his cheeks, and a beautiful smile on his lotus face. Krishna looked just like a theatrical artist. Krishna conveyed his intentions by his gestures, because they were staring at him, they were stunned. They could not say anything, they were so captivated by his beauty. He conveyed his intentions, what was in his mind, by his gestures. Resting his left arm on a friend's shoulder and twirling a lotus, a play lotus, in his right hand. By this, Krishna was telling the ladies, I have seized within my hand your lotus hearts, and I'm eagerly twirling them around. They were spinning, just like the gopi said, avartita lakshanam manubhavam vegam, that the whirlpools in the river Yamuna were actually a symptom of the ecstatic mood of the river, of the Yamuna river. So similarly, the ecstatic Krishna was twirling the minds, spinning the minds of these brahmanis by his beauty. So again, we should remember that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sat Aishwarya Purna. He possesses all strength. For him, Mama Angsa Teja Sambhava, that the universe, this universe, rests on the smallest part of his potency. He's unlimitedly powerful. Everything in existence rests upon him. Everything rests upon his potency. But he's not struggling hard to maintain this universe with his power. It is not even a fragment of his power. Just like lifting this. It is not like, say if I could lift 100 kilo weight, which I'm sure I couldn't, but that would, I'd struggle and struggle. But this is nothing. I could, because I'm getting old. But it's nothing. Just lifting this. So Krishna maintains all of existence. All of material existence. Everything. Mama Amsa Tejasa Amsa. Amsa means just a part of his Teja, his power. Small part. Insignificant part. Not a struggle. All of existence. This is God. This is Ishwara. This is Param Ishwara. He is in everyone's heart. Ishwara Savabhutanam Riddhishe Arjuna Tishtati. He's controlling. It is Him, His potency, that allows us to breathe unconsciously as we sit here. And our hearts beat. And our eyes, against our will, without being conscious of it, blinking. Krishna's potency, but this, everything is resting on Him. And yet, despite Him being all-powerful, He's in the forests of Vrindavan, wandering around without shoes, herding the cows, stealing hearts of all living entities, playing the flute. He's all attractive. All attractive, all beautiful, all powerful. And yet, he's this beautiful coward boy. And that is why Brahma saw Krishna's beauty and paid his obeisances, because he got a glimpse of Krishna's power. And therefore he wanted to offer his prayers and leave as quickly as possible. This is God. This is the highest concept of the Supreme Lord. Power is there, but the love of the devotee is so great, it minimizes the realization of the power. Just like when the president or the prime minister is with his mother. It may be okay. She knows he's the prime minister, but her relationship with him is so deep, she's thinking of him as a young boy. He can't help it. She's a mother. The relationship is loving. You may be the prime minister, but did you brush your teeth this morning? Did you wash properly? You know, are you getting enough to eat? Don't be too busy. Relax sometimes. The mother will think like that. It's natural because of love. And the residents of Vrindavan have such loving relationships with Krishna that they may know that He is all-powerful, but the love doesn't allow them that to surface in their consciousness. This is the power of their love. And this is what they see. So Krishna, therefore, according to one's love, one sees, according to one's mood, one sees differently. Just like if you cook sweets all day long, all day long, your profession is to cook sweets. And you cook this kind of sweet in rasgullas and that kind of sweet in sandesh. All day long you cook sweets. And then when you pass a sweet shop, a shop that sells sweets, will you get hungry? No, not at all. Because your mood has been tempered by something else. And another person who doesn't eat sweets frequently at all, when he sees the sweets, his mouth will water. So one's mind, one's mood, determines what one sees when one sees what one sees. We don't see with our eyes, we see with our mind. So because the gopis of Vrindavan have the topmost love for Krishna, that determines the depth that they can penetrate into Krishna's beauty. Because Krishna's beauty is unlimitedly, because he's unlimited beautiful, and they see unlimited beauty, they see the extent of Krishna's beauty. Krishna reveals that because their mind is so intensely full of love. And according to the how much love one has, one will see differently. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, my lotus heart, while seeing you, I have seized within my hand by this, twirling a plain lotus in his right hand. Krishna was telling the ladies, I've seized with my hand your lotus hearts, and I'm eagerly twirling them about. Or Krishna was telling them, while seeing you, who possess loving sentiments, my lotus heart is twirling out of eagerness. Thus, on the pretext of twirling a lotus flower, I am revealing to you that my heart is twirling about. This is what you should deduce from how I am acting. Now the next verse. O ruler of men, because Sukadeva Goswami is speaking to Maharaj Prakrit, for a long time those Brahmana ladies had heard about Krishna. They had heard about him again and again and again and again for a long time. And this point will come up later when the husbands speak, or come up later anyway. This point, this is such an integral part of the process of developing love for Krishna, is hearing about Krishna. Shravanadi, Sudha Chitte, Konive Udoy. It causes an arising of love to come to the heart. They heard about Krishna for a long time. They heard about Krishna, their beloved, and his glories had become the constant ornaments of their ears. What a nice way of saying it. Their ears were decorated with the pastimes of Krishna. They were hearing him. Through the aperture of their eyes, they now forced him to enter within their hearts. And then they embraced him within for a long time. In this way, they finally gave up the pain of separation from him, just as sages give up the anxiety of false ego by embracing their innermost consciousness. Srila Sridhar Swami comments on this verse. How they attain to immortality by the merging of even their physical functions is stated by the verse beginning Praya. They repeatedly heard the glories of their beloved of Krishna. These glories were Karnapur in the sense that they filled the ears and perfected them. Or by the ornaments of their ears, their minds were submerged in Sri Krishna. In other words, their hearts being fully absorbed in him, they made him enter within by their eyes, and by embracing him for a long time, they gave up their pain. This is as one gives up the functions of ego by embracing pragya, the witness present in the consciousness. So, giving the example of sages, how they become one with the witness, the pragya of their consciousness. So it's an example of what these brahmanis did. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments. He repeats what Sridhar Swami says. Thus they had their minds absorbed in him for so many days by the process of hearing about him. And now they made him enter within by their eyes onto the couch of their lotus-like hearts. And for a long time they freely and firmly embraced him, and they became stunned from the ecstasy caused by the firmness of this embrace, and simultaneously they were able to give up the pain, the distress, the transcendental distress caused by separation from him. Next text. Lord Krishna, who witnesses the thoughts of all creatures, understood how those ladies had abandoned all worldly hopes and come there simply to see him. Thus he addressed them as follows with a smile upon his face. Vishnu Chakrabarti Thakur comments herein. Short comment. Seeing the ladies in such a state, because they were looking at Krishna, but they had pulled them into his heart, into their hearts, through their eyes, due to their love. And they were stunned, embracing Krishna within their hearts. So Krishna understood their minds. And seeing the ladies in such a state, standing stunned with the plates of food in their hands, they had brought the food to feed Krishna and they couldn't move. Krishna, the witness of everyone's thoughts, began laughing, and he spoke. And he said, "Welcome, O most fortunate ladies. Please sit down and make yourselves comfortable. What can I do for you? That you have come here to see me is most appropriate." Purport. Just as Sri Krishna welcomed the gopis who came to dance with him at night, so this will be described later on in the 29th chapter of the 10th canto, just a few more chapters away. He similarly welcomed the Brahmin's wives, whose pure love for him was proved by their overcoming many hindrances to see the Lord. The word upapanam indicates that although these ladies had rejected their husband's orders, their behavior was not at all inappropriate, since their husbands had obviously tried to obstruct their loving service to Lord Krishna. We'll read Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comment. Krishna addressed the wives of the Brahmins who were endowed with the greatest prema, love, in a similar manner that he addressed the gopis who came for the rasa dance. Krishna said, "Your coming is all glorious, and you are very fortunate, Mahabhaga. Out of desire to see me, you have overcome many obstacles to come here. But I cannot repay you in any way, so what can I do for you? I can simply remain your debtor. Please rest here for some time, and you can look at me and have my darshan." 26. Certainly, expert Krishna's continuing to speak. Certainly, expert personalities who can see their own true interests render unmotivated and uninterrupted devotional service directly unto me, for I am most dear to the soul. It is only by contact with the self that one's vital breath, intelligence, mind, friends, body, wife, children, wealth, and so on are dear. Therefore, what object can possibly be more dear than one's own self? So Krishna began to speak philosophy in 26 and 27. We'll read 26. He's indicating his position. He says, certain expert personalities who can see their own true interest render unmotivated and uninterrupted devotional service directly unto me. Because this is the perfection. This is the true interest of every living entity. We have so many other concepts of what is good for us. But to love Krishna, to love God, is the supreme good. It is the eternal benefit. And compared to that, everything or nothing is good. And Srila Prabhupada used to accept that standard. He would criticize everything. Everything, everything and everyone who didn't accept that standard as the true standard of either self-interest, the purpose of life, and true gain. He would criticize because he was looking from that point of view. Just like if you have $10, and you see someone who has $9 or someone who has $100. You see them differently than a person who has $1 million or $10 million, how he views a person with $10 or $100. You see them completely differently. So from the perspective of $1 million, $10 doesn't seem, it's insignificant. Completely insignificant. If you have millions of dollars, $10, who cares? You gain $10, you lose $10, doesn't make any difference. Doesn't affect your fortune. But if you have $13 or $7, then $10 makes a big difference. You gain 10 and you've doubled your fortune. You lose 10 and you have nothing left. So whether something is good or bad depends on the perspective, the mind's perspective. So Srila Prabhupada used to see only from this perspective of Krishna and love for Krishna. He would view anything other than that as insignificant and not worthy of expending one's energy or life to attain. Because Prabhupada kept $1 billion in his heart. He kept love for C.C. Radha and Krishna Vrindavan Dham with him. And therefore, compared to that, everything was $1 compared to $1 billion. Insignificant. And those who spent their time trying to gather pennies, insignificant material happinesses, were foolish. Why not try for the best thing? Why not acknowledge the difference between a lesser good, a temporary lesser good that ultimately brings misery, like everything in the material world, and trying to gain the highest spiritual gain, which is eternal, $1 billion. If we gain the temporary and lose the eternal, what have we gained? And on the other hand, if we gain the eternal and lose something temporarily, which we're going to lose anyway, time will take everything from us anyway, then what have we lost? So Krishna is explaining, those who can see their own true interest, expert personalities, render, what do? They render unmotivated, uninterrupted devotional service. Love. They love me and serve me. For I am most dear to the soul. It is not the things, that which is connected to the body is dear to the body. But we are not the body. We are souls. So Krishna is saying that it is I am most dear to every one of you, every one of me, all of us. Because we are the part of us that is eternal, who actually us, the part that doesn't change to all the changes of the bodies, it is Krishna who is dear to that. And we, unfortunately, conceive of so many other things as dear to us and important and ascribe value to them. Well, actually, we will lose them in time and they will cause us pain. So Krishna's explaining this purport. The Supreme Lord informed the Brahmanas' wives that not only they, but all people who recognize their true self-interest take to the spiritual process of loving service to the Lord. Lord Krishna's Atma Priya, the real object of love for everyone. Although each individual has his own taste and freedom, ultimately every living being is a spiritual spark of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus everyone's primary loving attraction is constitutionally meant for Lord Sri Krishna. Loving service to the Lord should be ahaituki, without personal motive, and avyavahita, unobstructed by mental speculations, selfish desires, or any quirk of time or circumstance. is continuous, unbroken. Like when you're pouring honey from a jar, there's a thick, unbroken stream. Our love for Krishna should be like that, without any motive to get anything from Krishna. Not give me, give me, give me. Or thank you for giving me. And if I don't thank you for giving me, you won't give me any more. But love for Krishna is not like that. Love for Krishna is just in the same mood as a mother loves a child. Why does a mother love a child? Because she's a mother and the child is her child. There's no other reason. It's just natural. It springs naturally from the relationship. That's why we love Krishna. That's anyam lasita sanyam jnana kamara navritana kalena krishna nasyalanam basimutamam. So similarly, that's what Krishna is saying. Our true interest, our natural consciousness is this kind of love. It's just natural for the soul. So Srila Sridhar Swami explains why it's natural. He says that it is natural is described, why it is appropriate for them to have come. It's because of the soul's natural relationship with Krishna. And why the reason behind it, technical reason, is described in the next verse. It is only by contact with the self that one's vital breath, intelligence, mind, friends, body, wife, children, wealth, and so on are dear. When the soul leaves, there is no more dearness ascribed to these things. There is no more affection. There is no more caring about these things when the soul leaves. No one loves a dead body. You may love the memory of the person who was alive. You may think of that person. But when the body is a dead body, when the soul leaves, then what do you do with it? No one keeps it in the house and feeds it. You burn it, you bury it. You get rid of it fast. It's not lovable. That which was lovable is no longer there. It is the soul that causes the attachment and the lovableness of these things. Therefore, since the soul, it is contact with the soul that makes us so attached to the body or someone else's body even, therefore what object, Krishna says, can possibly be more dear than one's own self? We love our body, not because we love the body, but because it's connected to who we to us, our true self. So it is actually the self that we love. And Krishna is the Chatma. He is the Priyatman, he is the soul of the soul. He gives life to the soul, so he is most dear. That's what Krishna is saying. Purport. The word yat samprakat in this verse refers to contact with the individual self and ultimately with the Supreme Self, the Lord, who is the origin of the individual living being. By developing Krishna consciousness, one automatically becomes self-realized, and thus one's vital strength, intelligence, mind, relatives, body, family, and wealth all become enhanced and brilliant by the central influence of Krishna consciousness. This happens because Krishna consciousness is the optimum, efficient conjunction of the individual self, who is pure consciousness, with the Supreme Self, and Supreme Consciousness, Krishna, the connection. Krishna consciousness means Krishna Bhakti Rasata Bhavato Mati. It means the awakening of the rasa, of the sweet mellow, the sweet taste of one's love for Krishna. That is what Krishna consciousness means. It's awakening that. Because we have a connection with Krishna at this very moment, but there is no Krishna consciousness. We have an inseparable relationship with him, just like the finger has a relationship with the body. We are part of Krishna. Mamai vamso jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana, eternally. But now, Anadi Bahimukh, we've turned our back on Krishna. So we forget him. Krishna Bhule Singhji. We forget Krishna. But our relationship is there nevertheless. But the proper relationship to have with Krishna that nourishes the soul and causes the soul ecstasy is Krishna consciousness. So that's the optimal conjunction or connection with Krishna. We'll read Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's comment. 27. To inspire them, meaning these Brahmanis, with intelligence, Krishna uses logic to pacify the Brahmins' wives. He brings them to the intellectual platform. It is because of contact with the self that one's vital breath, intelligence, mind, friends, body, wife, children, and wealth are dear. What can be more dear than the self? Same point. So then Krishna says, after bringing them all the way there, You should thus return to the sacrificial arena where your husbands are, because your husbands, the learned Brahmins, are householders, and they need your assistance to finish their respective sacrifice. Srila Sridhar Swami comments on this. You have achieved all success. You have seen me. You have love for me. Now go. Go to the sacrificial arena, but the wives of the Brahmins may object. If we are successful, you're saying we're successful, then why should we go? In reply to this, the Lord speaks the words beginning, Pataya. They will accomplish. In other words, they should go back out of kindness, out of their kindness and mercy for their husbands. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments on this verse, text 27, by saying, 28, because I am that very super soul, the Paramatma, as you have heard from Garga Muni, the great sage, therefore, I am always embracing you anyway, therefore, you can return to the sacrificial arena. I am in your heart, because you've just taken me in your heart with your eyes. So therefore there's no problem if you leave. The Brahmin's wives replied, that may be, but how can we return there, giving up you, who are directly the Paramatma, and you are standing before us. You are the super soul, but you're in front of us. You're in everyone's heart, but you're right before us. How can we leave? Krishna replies, your husbands need your assistance to complete the sacrificial rituals which have been explained by me in the Vedas. This is my command. Therefore, go and perform those activities according to my order, and you will be able to see me directly there as well. If you do that, you will also see me directly in front of you as you're seeing me now. Then the wives of the Brahmins replied, O Almighty One, please do not speak these cruel words. Rather, you should fulfill your promise that you always reciprocate with your devotees in kind, in the way that they love you. You reciprocate with them. Now that we have attained your lotus feet, we simply wish to remain here in the forest so we may carry upon our heads the garlands of tulsi leaves. You may neglectfully kick away with your lotus feet. We're ready to give up all material relationships. Here's the purport. Here the Brahmins' wives are saying something similar to what the gopis say at the beginning of the Rasa dance, 10:29-31, when Lord Krishna tells them to go home as well. Like this verse, the gopi's statement begins with the words, because the first word of this, Maivam vibhu arhati bhavam gaditam visamsam, the same exact words Krishna will speak to the gopis later on. my vam vibhu arhiti bhavam gaditam visam sam. Nigama refers to the Vedic literature, which states that one who surrenders at the lotus feet of the Lord does not return to this material world. Thus the Brahmin's wives appealed to the Lord that since they had surrendered to him, they had given themselves to him, it was unfair for him to order them to return to their materialistic husbands. According to Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, Lord Krishna might have pointed out to the Brahmin's wives, "You young ladies are members of the aristocratic Brahmin community, so how can you surrender at the feet of a mere cowherd boy?" To this the ladies might have replied, "Since we have already surrendered at your lotus feet, and since we desire to become your servants, we are obviously not maintaining a false identification as members of the so-called Brahmana community. You can easily ascertain this from our words." Lord Krishna may have replied, "I am a cowherd boy, and my proper maidservants and girlfriends are the cowherd girls, the gopis." The wives may have answered, "True, let them be so. Let them shine forth if you are embarrassed in front of your relatives to make Brahmana ladies your maidservants. We certainly don't want to embarrass you. We will not go to your village, but rather we will remain in Vrindavan, like presiding deities of the forest. We simply desire to perfect our lives by even a slight trace of connection with you." Thus, by the spiritual insight of Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, we learn that the Brahmin's wives offered to remain at a distance and simply take the tulsi leaves that would fall from the lotus feet of Krishna or be crushed by the feet of his girlfriends would he embrace them. The ladies offered to carry these tulsi leaves upon their heads to worship them, thus renouncing the desire to become Krishna's intimate girlfriends or maidservants, a position they knew was difficult to achieve. The young Brahmana ladies begged to remain in Vrindavan forest. If the Lord had then asked, "Then what will your family members say?" they would have replied, "We have already transcended our so-called relatives because we are seeing you, the Supreme Lord, face to face." Our husbands, fathers, sons, brothers, other relatives and friends will no longer take us back. And how could anyone else be willing to give us shelter? Therefore, since we have thrown ourselves at your lotus feet and have no other destination, please, O chastiser of enemies, grant our desires. What is the desire to stay with Krishna? Purport. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur comments as follows. From their very youth, the Brahmins' wives had heard about Lord Krishna's beauty, qualities and sweetness from the women folk of Vrindavan village, and also from the flower ladies, the betel nut sellers and others. So everyone in Vrindavan just simply talking about Krishna. And they heard this and they fell in love with Krishna. Consequently, they always felt ecstatic love for Krishna and were indifferent to the household duties. Their husbands, seeing them as deviant, doubted them and avoided dealing with them as far as possible. Now the wives of the Brahmins were ready to formally reject their so-called families and neighbors, and out of great agitation they were crying and placing their heads upon Lord Krishna's lotus feet, offering obeisances. In this way they were pleading with Krishna to accept them. In this way, with choking voices, they spoke the above verse. They begged that Lord Krishna bestow upon them the benediction that he would be their only destination, that he, the chastiser of enemies, subdue all their enemies, those difficulties obstructing them from attaining the Lord. The wives of the Brahmins simply wanted to serve Lord Krishna. And this is pure Krishna consciousness in ecstatic love of Godhead. Sridhar Swami comments to this 30th text. If we go home like you order, our family members will not accept us, O chastiser of the enemies, O subduer of lust, greed, sin, and so forth. those are the enemies. Of us who have thrown their bodies at the tips of your feet, there is no goal, even attainment of heaven. So therefore, please bestow the status of being your servant upon us. This is all they desired, to serve Krishna. So the next verses, 31-33, describe Krishna's reply to them, to their pleas. There's just one comment that I was looking for. Just wait one moment. Can't find it. Okay. Thank you very much. Krishna willing, we shall continue with this chapter and perhaps complete it in the next class on Wednesday. Shrima Bhagavatam ki jai, Shrila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhakta ki jai.